FM-Szenario von Eran Scherf.
As an engineer by profession, I was interested to hear that Hänsel and Gretel listeners access a culture through a gate. Indeed, their idea of construction is very different from that of Kalthum's listeners. It's all about the difference between a gate that is pre-constructed and one that is rebuilt every time someone passes through it while singing and hence listening. The former is constructed beforehand in order to prompt the audience to pass through it, while the construction of the latter relies on the audience contributing their attention. Hänsel and Gretel listeners are encouraged by tradition to regard an opera or a rock song as a mirror to identify with. Kalthum, on the other hand, is not interested in spoon-feeding the audience, but prefers to establish a dialogue with it. To Hänsel and Gretel listeners, this role does not seem honorable enough. When Kalthum groans, it's not because she's tired of them. This wordless voice that veils silence, love and pain is her building material. That is how she establishes a relationship with her listeners. It's the hidden and complex meaning of her singing. An intimate relationship produced in public. A relationship that comes into existence when you see your audience as neither an abstract mass nor a group of friends, but as partners in a dialogue. There's a composition written by the composer, but the lyrics turn into something completely different when she sings them. They become an extension of speaking and acting, of everyday life. Listen to how her breath carries her lyrics, and one of her breaths can be quite long. Her lyrics end at the end of a breath rather than at the last word, and live in the groans in between. A song sung by her is not, aesthetically speaking, a closed and complete thing, such as an aria by Verdi or a song by Edith Piaf, but rather an open and variable thing, rebuilt each time. She's not just repeating a word, a phrase, or a verse. Her repetition is an act of giving, and giving is an act that implies a receiver, an audience that responds not only with applause, but co-produces the dialogue with a wide range of silent gestures. This gestural vocabulary may sound strange to somebody who listens to an aria as a voyeur. Each person must decide whether to persist in the voyeur role, rating it vulgar to be addressed as a listener. Nobody can overhear us. Nobody saw it happen. There was no camera there, and no images of the murdered aunt were recorded. Often I wonder why nobody in the family wonders where the newspapers disappear. Why nobody misses yesterday's newspaper, not even in the garbage. Nobody picks them up at the telegraph office. The bits of news arrive on their own. They swoop into the newsroom like wild swallows and land, exhausted, already translated into human speech, on narrow strips of paper on the editor's desk. 10 apparatuses receive them ceaselessly. A dark monastery with 100 cells, 100 separate telephone booths. Each cell contains a hermit pleading in a furious voice to the god of the sensational for an offering. Berlin speaking. BZ newsroom. Ulstein speaking. Hello? Louder, please. Couriers doze like a group of the unemployed on a park bench. Like passengers expecting a train that always arrives, always departs, and never stops. The train that carries news circling the globe. Many have been waiting since yesterday. The cable telegrams from America have already arrived, full of inconstant stock exchange figures, those charming adventurers that flit so agilely across the border, carrying only lightweight luggage, filled with the forged news that is so precious to a newspaper man's heart. At the height of the search for the professional liar's imaginary non-terrorists, Clinton blamed Canada and its unpatrolled, unsupervised border. The interrogation of Alina Singer, which began 75 hours ago at the Polish border, continues. Do the Israeli border police prosecute Robin Hood because he bootlegs texts by Mahatma Gandhi in Hebron? In a district court in Jerusalem, or at the border between fairy tales and the news. Oh, Ulstein House is large enough to accommodate all those foreign guests. With 4,500 rooms, 6 stories, endless stairs, a dozen printing works, most certainly Germany's best mill for grinding the daily harvest of lies and truth. 6 daily newspapers bake the daily bread for the million art population of Berlin, for all its social strata, for all sexes and ages, for all of Germany and for its cities in particular. In Ulstein House, nobody cultivates the habit of walking. Only idlers use the stairs. The elevator is the only means of transport. Its open cages fly past every story. The elevator door has been done away with. It belongs in a museum. People fling themselves in and out of it. Corrections, manuscripts, telegrams have all had to learn acrobatics. Ponderous, asthmatic editorials fly along the wire cables with the agility of circus acrobats. Since old man Ulstein opened his first outfit on Kochstraße, a small printing shop, his undertaking has grown continuously. After reaching a certain level of perfection, it came to a standstill and began eating its own body. If production one day no longer has the courage to smash its old organizational forms and digest them in its own stomach, it will fall to a more flexible and stronger competitor that will eat it for breakfast. Berliner Morgenpost, Berlin Morning Mail. This old Berlin petty bourgeois newspaper sprouted from a cemetery, but it wasn't bred on the graves of its own outdated forms, but rather on those of the entire social democratic press destroyed by Otto von Bismarck. At the time, Ulstein knew enough to flood the breach in the newspaper market created by socialist law with hundreds of thousands of copies of its middlebrow rag. It was a newspaper tailored to the greatest possible masses of the petty bourgeoisie. How often have the methods changed since that time? From manual typesetting to machine setting, from drawings to photography, and from colorless, blurred photography to artistic illustrations. Every technical revolution was followed by a brief illness for the entire undertaking, like any organism after a vaccination. Then came a mad forward advance and phenomenal profits. Hundreds of thousands of new subscribers, new buildings, workshops, employees, delivery trucks, telephones. In recent post-war years, symptoms of possible appendicitis. The old machines used to cast matrices. English machines ran on gas and had to be kept constantly full of liquid lead. They have now been replaced with German machines, which simply guzzle coal and can be refilled at any time. A business does not understand the concept of gratitude and quickly forgets earlier contributions. The old machine department has breathed its last. It is empty and cold, and its blank plates reflect the flames firing its rivals' furnaces. The blithe rattling of its matrices and filings echoes in the abandoned rooms. Once they published only the morning paper and feared adding an evening edition because it might cut into circulation. There is a hole in a street in Hebron. A resident fears that a passing car might crash into the hole and injure the driver. He asks the management of the local hospital to station an ambulance by the hole in case of an accident. But the hospital management, mindful that the car could be carrying 4 people, thinks 4 ambulances would be necessary. So management calls in the mayor to approve the plan and the cost of stationing 4 ambulances by the hole. The mayor clearly sees the need for ambulances, but he is uncertain about the number, since another car might crash into the car already in the hole, thus increasing the number of casualties. He suggests filling the hole in the street and opening up a new one next to the hospital. The street is borne along on carts loaded with fruits and vegetables, on vendors' cries notable for the faint praise that turns produce into a mere attribute of price. products cannot be sold on the market where the machines to produce them were bought. A collection of economic islands connected by a PhD in detour planning. A dream of bureaucracy on a one-to-one scale. A diploma to chase away flies in a state office. A price crisis in bullets since the enemy is not worth a shot. An unplastered wall covered by a pile of James Bond bags. A weapon for when you need to do more than just kill. Immigrants imported into a file named home. A homeland transformed into a slogan. Welcome to my country. Welcome to Palestine. Enjoy it quickly. It will end in 1 kilometer. King George Car Rental, named after King George Street, 50 years after the king has left. Mileage is free, but the car is not insured for any of the places you can drive it. Look at the license plate of the car you get. It will be read as the first word in your story, open to whomever wishes to inherit. Get into the car as if into a new tradition of clothing. Hang the number plate you are identified with on the bumper. Another number plate is on the back seat. A step of choreographic quality and you are out of the car. A new number on the bumper and you are in another car. They call this dance techno and veil. This highway branches off. The beginning that no one owns and everybody protects is just over there. It looks like a stone on Sunday, like a carpet on Monday, and there are 7 days every week. What is that on the roof? A clothesline. Is the house occupied? No. It's just a sign of life. Does anybody live there? Does a sign of life mean someone lives there? What else is it there for? Population statistics from a satellite? I think the family started building because the building permit would have expired otherwise. They built the house while living in it until they ran out of material. It looks like a frame someone paid so much for that he could no longer afford what he wanted to frame. But it is well constructed. That's a construction you can build on. It's a mixed neighborhood. Anybody who has the right or gets credit from the state can live here. Does that mean this man I see there is a Palestinian? Where is his keffiyeh? It's everywhere, but now he's wearing his military cap because he's in battle. You mean with the cameraman? Bring your search for meaning to a complete stop. Come with me. Where to? To see this man. What's this man doing? Going home. But he's moving forward, then backward. That's his way of walking. He's not walking, he's swinging, he's dancing. Watch him closely. Count his steps. 1, 2, 4, 7, 9, forward. 1, 2, 4, 7, 8, backward. What does this mean? He's walking. This is the only way he knows to get home. 10 steps forward and 9 backward. That is, he advances by 1 step. What if his mind wandered and he made a mistake in the count? In that case, he wouldn't get home. Do you mean anything by that? No, nothing. What are you searching for? Nothing. Maybe whatever has hold of my footsteps. You have entered SQL in the beginning field. In doing so, you accept our terms and conditions. Something happened or not. In the SQL, you can continue to carry on conversations in which you did not participate. However, only the sequels of additional listeners will reveal whether your sequel will also have been a beginning. Congratulations! Your sequel is a possible beginning. Would you like to continue the conversation in possibility mode? If you continue in possibility mode, it is possible that the conversation will be continued regardless of whether or not there is conversation. You have selected the following conversation participants. One person who can speak without saying anything. One person who can speak but articulates without words. One architecture that cannot speak but has something to say. One object that replaces a word. One netizen that only says anything in combination with a pose. This selection allows you to receive what has been said without a speaker and a listener manifesting themselves. This means your role has become unpredictable for the program and conforms to the terms and conditions of listener's voice. Would you like to continue your conversation with the automatic moderator? Yes, I will stick with it. No, I am turning off. None of the above. Welcome to the press conference. Did they bring the Israeli activist to trial because he tried to prevent houses of Palestinians from being demolished? Welcome to the... or because he pretended to be Robin Hood? Welcome to the press conference on the occasion of the film premiere of In the Meantime. This conference gets support from Continuity, a program which receives your questions and passes them on to me live. Continuity has been made available by a radio station, Listener's Voice. And I would like to thank Listener's Voice for recording and broadcasting the conference. In the Meantime is a film that tells a true story. Does the German journalist advocate in her testimony? Let me assure you that news invents politics. All this is part of your question about the role of a German journalist in this story, and we don't know where to and we don't know where the story begins. But according to reports, it is said to continue. It is going to continue as a fairy tale. You may interrupt me any time by using Continuity to send me your questions. Do the Israeli border police prosecute Robin Hood because he is in touch with Red Riding Hood? Little Red Riding Hood says, to call an Israeli activist Robin Hood of the West Bank continues the Israeli policy of recounting the future of the Palestinian territories as a folk tale. Do the Israeli border police prosecute Robin Hood because he bootlegs texts by Mahatma Gandhi in Hebron? The New York Times said recently, this man is the Robin Hood of the Hebron Hills. The man who does not fit any category, after the International Herald Tribune said that this man is the Robin Hood of the whole West Bank. So the idea of casting the activist as a fairy tale figure is the reason why Red Riding Hood begins to act outside of the fairy tale. The man is a plumber, but he is at the center of a global solidarity campaign. But why, Little Red Riding Hood asks her interviewer, why do they mention that he is a plumber at all? Once you start the application, you cannot stop it. You cannot modify it. Different images overlay, and there is no clear structure. No structure or order, you understand? It's blurred. And the blurred, the more blurred it gets, the more visible it becomes that the girl only acts in the interplay of different versions. What connects Red Riding Hood and the activist? A true story, the film, and a true story, a story that happened in print and online media, and partly also in the occupied territories, in the Israeli occupied territories, in a district court in Jerusalem, or at the border between fairy tales and news coverage, Actually, we don't know. What links the activist with Robin Hood? One was born in the 20th century, the other in the 13th or 14th century, and he became famous for being an outlaw. Now, this would certainly be a role that could fit the activist, according to the judge who will sentence him, who has declared him guilty. He tried to stop military bulldozers from destroying corrugated iron huts, houses of Palestinian Bedouins, and he participated in a prohibited demonstration, says the indictment. But according to a different version told by the fairy tale, it's easy to understand that Robin Hood was not just an outlaw. He took money from the rich in order to help the poor, which is not what the activist does. He helps the poor without taking money from the rich. But this becomes very clear in the initial sequence. The topicality of a report is not what Red Riding Hood cares about. The girl intervenes, where fairy tales and stories or history interrupt each other, prolong each other. Does the German journalist advocate in her testimony that fairy tale figures get unlimited residence permits in the news? I don't want to get involved in speculation that if you cast the activist as a fairy tale figure, you put Red Riding Hood back in the time of a fairy tale. After all, the fact that the activist is cast as a fairy tale figure puts Little Red Riding Hood back into the world of fairy tale. After all, the girl needs numerous versions, and she needed several centuries until Italo Calvino offered her an opportunity to play the role of the victim, gave her an opportunity to play a different role from the role of the victim. Does Frankfurter Rundschau Online claim that Israeli opponents don't fit into any category of German press? The British Guardian Online says that the accused is not a typical activist. He is a member of the Arab-Jewish partnership Ta'ayush. He is a Jewish Israeli of Iraqi origin who is fluent in Arabic, and that the video on the website is a must, and you will hear, if you are able to distinguish Hebrew from Arabic, that the accused in the scene with the soldiers speaks Hebrew and he speaks Arabic with the Palestinians. And he asks both sides to refrain from acting violently, and then he lies down on the ground in front of the bulldozers. And he tells them, the soldiers, the Israeli soldiers, that he used to be a soldier himself and that they will maybe destroy the houses and just leave hatred behind. And the Guardian reader will be able to convince himself, herself, that this is true if he or she is able to understand, to distinguish Hebrew from Arabic. Does the German journalist advocate in her testimony that news invent politics? The main part of the film is about the trial in which Robin Hood is to be sentenced, the German journalist in this story, and her role. She was summoned as a witness for the defense, and she is witness to a dispute between different protagonists. The interpreter called in by the court obviously cannot translate from German into Hebrew. The judge had summoned him in order to translate for the accused from Hebrew into Arabic. The judge obviously thought the activist did not speak Hebrew, and the British Guardian Online says, indeed, the activist, the accused, is not a typical activist. Obviously, the international press wants to have the man, who does not fit any category, fit the category of a hero. Israeli law, however, does not interfere with the world of fairy tales, otherwise this world would be... There was a Robin from the Wood once upon a time in the 1960s. He travelled through German-language comics and he tried to rob people. He was called Robin du Bois in French. He didn't speak German, but he found a translator and had himself translated. The fact that there is no evidence that he truly existed some time in the past, and that's the tempting aspect, and that's why he can be presented as a robber of the aristocracy or as a fighter for social justice. Now, his translator had problems with the name. How can we translate Robin Hood into German? Was his question. Hood, cap. Well, that's easy to figure out, but then he did not think that the American press would eventually send Robin into the heat of the Hebron Hills. So he did not think that he should protect Robin from the sun. No hood, no cap. And he continued his investigation. Gangster, thug, crook were options, not quite fitting for a fighter for justice. The fighter for justice Robin was meant to be in English. But of course, for the robber who he had become in French, years have passed, new dictionaries have been printed, and hood has also become a short form for neighbourhood, which is a slang word for ghetto. For some time, Robin from the ghetto was in the pages of the translator's notebook in order to test whether his environment would accept the new name. If you are a Jew and white, people said, you feel shame to be from the ghetto. But if you are black and come from the ghetto, you are proud. And when I'm a Jew with the dark skin and come from Iraq, bingo, there were ghettos in Iraq as well. From the Wood can't be your family name anyway, because there are no woods in the West Bank, apart from the ones planted in the context of the Zionist project in order to mask the traces of destroyed Palestinian villages, and thus establish leisure time areas. But who wants to come from an environmental mask? So, in the trial against the Israeli activist Robin from the ghetto, judgment will be pronounced today for having insulted two soldiers who protected a bulldozer driver in the process of the demolition of Palestinian houses. He had already been found guilty. All over the world, fairy tale figures defended the activist. Does this sound like news? That question you may ask Red Riding Hood, because the court and the jury will not decide whether news from fairy tales should be part of the German news. The figure you are searching for is not available in real time. The figure you are searching for, the scene and the main part of the film end with this question by the witness to the judge. The credits, do we translate the credits? Sometimes last longer than the main section, as if it were impossible to identify who participates in the film. The United European Photo Agency announced today in Zurich that the photo of Little Red Riding Hood from Jaffa shows similarities to a photo registered with the agency. The image appeared last year in the southern German paper The Border Messenger in a story on border control. According to The Border Messenger, the woman in the photo is the children's dance teacher Alina Singer, dressed in a maid's uniform at a kindergarten party, Warsaw, 1966. The Border Messenger could not say where Alina Singer went after emigrating from Poland. It would have been plausible for her to immigrate to Palestine if it had been the 1940s, but at the end of the 1960s, it was already the State of Israel. The St. Gallen police, with the help of photograph investigators, are questioning whether the photo that appeared in the Wonderblog could have been taken in the area of Jaffa. Additionally, it remains unclear whether the Amden farmer who gave the trafficker and undocumented woman refuge can be held accountable. The woman said that she had to give up her Polish passport when she left Poland. She is, therefore, no longer a Pole and not yet anything else. She is, as it were, neutral and on her way south, the farmer told the newspaper Evening Lookout, adding that he had not seen Little Red Riding Hood during the incident. Meanwhile, hikers in the Amden region turned the simple farm hut into a holy shrine for undocumented persons. A photo spread in a fashion magazine says, "Terrorist couture. Palestinians hijacked Arab dress and renamed it Palestinian." A tiny yet legible text in the margin says, "Advertising section." Here's our commentary. Once upon a time, there was an honest man who had been given a piece of cloth by his friend from which to make a suit. He could not afford a tailor, but someone pretending to be a tailor approached him and offered to tailor the suit for free. The man gave him the cloth. Some days later, the tailor returned with the suit. The man tried it on. One sleeve was too long, the other one too short. The sides were twisted and the hem uneven. The collar was loose on the right and tight on the left, and the trouser legs were twisted. "What kind of suit is this?" the man asked in dismay. "Where is the problem?" retorted the tailor. "Where the sleeve is too long, you simply stretch out your arm and keep your shoulder down. Where it is too short, you pull the arm in and the shoulder up. Where the sides are twisted and the hem is uneven, you simply turn your torso to the side while walking. As to the collar, you simply keep your neck turned to the right all the time. Thus, the collar becomes looser on the left and fits better on the right. Where the trouser legs do not fit, you simply twist your legs in a line with the seam." The honest man of humble means followed his tailor's instructions. When he walked down the street, people looked at him in amazement. "Look at this poor devil," said one passerby to another. "He must be the most twisted, most deformed and ugliest creature in the world." "You must admit, though," replied the other thoughtfully, "that he probably has the best tailor in the world." Does the German journalist "couldn't we call an Israeli journalist for testimony? Maybe somebody has reported about the case in the Israeli press." Well, please take minutes. This is not about rewriting history. "I can give my testimony in Arabic. I studied Arabic literature and political science in London. I can translate for you." "What's your profession actually?" "I am a freelance journalist for German language online newspapers and journals." "Do you write reports or parodies?" "Well, that depends on the alternatives the program offers. I mean, it depends on what I write about. Some events happen according to the rules of parody, and then, of course, a journalist needs to be loyal to the subject matter she writes about. Normally, I start by logging into listener's voice. For example, I want to report about this trial, and then I would enter Robin Hood of the West Bank, the man for whom the New York Times tries to find a fitting category. Maybe the question Little Red Riding Hood asks herself. The program is a bit dull. It assumes that this is about a story which is logical. It searches a huge server, asks questions, and offers alternative scenarios. You choose and then you have the basic data for your version of the story. And sometimes the alternatives seem rather absurd. As if the program knew which alternative corresponds to the truth, or as if just one alternative corresponds to the truth. It's as if you believe that each case you judge has a precedent and that no action triggers something completely new, something you don't know anything about. And all of a sudden it's necessary. We don't quite know what. Or maybe we lack the courage to know. And you assume that there is no language to speak about it, and you are faced with it as if you were an unsummoned witness. Without betraying any secrets, could you perhaps tell us something about how someone takes on a new identity in such a service? The such-and-such department of the Secret Service sent me to the port of so-and-so for 3 months to work with so-and-so. I played a person, in person, second person, third person. This is Listener's Voice, a radio station for listeners' calls operated by an automatic moderator. Listener's Voice broadcasts on various frequencies purchased but not used by other broadcasters. You can find Listener's Voice by listening while scanning the FM dial. If no calls come in, the automatic moderator switches to station search. In that case, you will hear whatever the moderator finds in your reception area. Listener's Voice is not responsible for the content of the broadcasts. The language of transmission, style, and the length of what is said depends on you. Identify yourself as I, she, he, or it. Listener's Voice has only limited capacity for transmitting identifying information. Two programs assist the automatic moderator: the register and the index. The register contains data such as the names of people, cities, states, wars, and newspapers. Occasionally, the register interrupts the transmission of such data by stating such and such or providing alternatives to the data you have provided. The index is programmed to recognize repetition or combinations of words. When it recognizes these as an attempt to program a discussion, it retransmits the repeated words and recommences the announcement. Immediately afterwards, Listener's Voice changes frequency. Listener's Voice is a place without an address at the edge of democracy. By definition, it has no target audience. The station has been made possible by the Visa Cardholders Club and the Immigrant Workers Society for Visa Applicants. Further donations are not required. Listener's Voice in FM transition. If I were that confused listener, I wouldn't worry. By listening attentively, one can easily distinguish whether a voice sounds the way it does for erotic or religious purposes. Undoubtedly, a show that has no clearly defined target audience can end up with a mixed audience. And what else is such a mix but a monkey wrench in the statistics? People don't get together to listen to the radio, nor do radio listeners have group awareness like chatroom users do. Only when a voice says, "Good evening, you are listening to Stay Tuned," are you reminded that you are among other listeners about whom you know nothing and whom you will never meet. If you leave your story, reception errors may occur. Error 111. There are characters that are at home in language, but a short story is not a country from which one can emigrate. Error 243. Sex characteristics unpredictable. Error 576. Double casting. You are the one doing the reporting and the one being reported on.
If I were to report on it, if I were to report on listening, the program can run long. When listening, I divorce myself from time. It is as if I were here and there, or here and here, or here and here, or here and here. Neither simultaneously nor one after the other. If I were to report on it, the stairs connect both. The stairs connect both levels. But whether the person standing above ever encounters the person standing below, if I were to report on it, the person standing above, behind my voice, you can imagine the person standing above. Behind my voice, you can also imagine the person standing below. Sometimes they bump into each other. Sometimes they bump into each other when I am not there. How could I be everywhere? I am a collection of imaginings. How could I be everywhere where people are being oppressed and killed? Nor can one oppress and kill everywhere I am. I'm in receive mode. Everywhere I am. There is a piano concert on the radio. I'm at a piano concert. Apparently an old record. I'm on the radio. Like the scratchy music from an old phonograph record. I'm at the lake that sometimes in the summer holidays comes across the lake. I'm here. Wherever that is. My standby reception mode has carried me beyond time. 1, 2, 3, 4, from. I bid you welcome. From the 15th story of an apartment building. From the living room of. From. I bid you welcome. Please state where in the broadcast you would like to live. Ladies and gentlemen, the information. We have just received information. The information that during our live reports you will not experience delays any longer than the time it takes. Ladies and gentlemen, to tell you, we have just received information that this is Continuity, the program assisting listener's voice. The file path of your report includes Red Riding Hood, Human Trafficker, and Poland. What follows are possible sequels to your subject. One moment, please. Search results are loading. First sequel. Format unknown. Finally, listener's voice has been hacked. There is now a forum where one can chat without the interference of the automatic moderator. Go to the cloud server, select mask, as usual, as if you wanted to create an access code for a conference in so-and-so, and when you're asked for which conference do you wish to create an access code, enter cloud server, and you'll be in. You don't need a password for the forum. The only person who can't enter is the automatic moderator. That's it, for all those who didn't know. About Red Riding Hood's trafficker. If the maid with the mask who was stopped at the Polish border is the trafficker, then she's a real person. At the end of March 1968, the news ticker carried her story through the global press, and since then it has been considered the longest interrogation in the history of border control. The questioning lasted for 76 hours and 2 minutes. Like many newspapers, the Border Messenger carried the story at the time. The footage of the interrogation has now been released by the Polish customs authorities. However, the material is 12 minutes shorter than what was allegedly recorded. And, as you've probably guessed, it's no longer about the trafficker or the girl. This time, it's the missing 12 minutes that made headlines. Beginning tomorrow morning, the Border Messenger will put the 1968 ticker report online at exactly the same time as it was recorded 40 years ago. These days, staging that kind of real-time feeling is considered documentary reporting. I consider it unlikely that a Polish dance teacher, disguised as a maid, with her face behind a mask, is Red Riding Hood's trafficker. In the 1940s, it might have been understandable that she left Poland for Palestine, but by the end of the 1960s, the Israeli state already existed. The fact that Israel existed in the late 1960s doesn't mean that Palestine doesn't exist anymore. If we're not careful, this forum could soon turn into Germany Seeks Red Riding Hood. Why Germany? Because we're speaking German? Your Egon Erwin Kisch, Mexico City. It seems to me the trafficker is nothing more than a ringtone identity. Isn't a ringtone identity enough to traffic a young girl? Ringtone identities are masks that mask additional masks, but no faces. There's nobody behind them. I mean, there is something behind it, but not in the sense of a person that we could, let's say, interview, as much as I would like to. Is that supposed to be the profile of a human trafficker? The listener who is posing as Egon Erwin Kisch from Mexico City undoubtedly knows how to do an interview with a netizen like a ringtone identity. In one of his reports from Mexico City, Kisch dealt with the problem of an interviewer and the interview partner not speaking the same language. His interview partners are pyramids. In general, it's difficult, indeed impossible, to have a conversation with pyramids, he says. But if you want to dedicate yourself to a career as a pyramid interviewer, you can't allow yourself to be deterred by such impossibilities. You always have to remember that a pyramid has something to say. Perhaps it occurs to one that a pyramid has something to say if, like Kisch, the German-speaking reporter in Mexican exile, one assumes a third language, beyond your own and the foreign one. A language spoken by humans that articulates itself in pyramids or ringtones becomes independent and opens up spaces that welcome us as exiles. Whatever. If you want to interview a netizen like the ringtone identity, remember that it has something to say, but may not speak your language. And remember to thank your interview partner for the interview. Even if, as happened to Kisch, it responds with something like, I did it because you're European. Over there, where you guys are, the blessing that you brought us is coming to you yourselves. It's time that we sent a scribe over to interview your rubble. If Red Riding Hood is trafficked in Polish, she'll still be free in German. Whatever. How can somebody who's trafficked in Polish be searched for in German? Surely the trafficker exists. And who knows, by the time it's all gone out on the air, at the moment the cloud server has allotted it an air date in 2038, maybe Palestine will exist too. According to the most recent ticker, the woman is a Polish citizen of Jewish descent who applies for a permit to travel to Switzerland in 1968. The law allows her to take furniture and other practical objects with her, yet she is not permitted to take ready money. In order to convert her capital into objects she can take out of the country, she orders a complete set of furniture to be made by her friend, a carpenter. The friend carves stories from the life of the woman into the furniture. Suspicious of the artistic objects, the border police doubt their validity as practical objects. Furniture may be furniture, but hand-carved pieces could be considered items belonging to national culture and would, as such, be prohibited from leaving the country. The woman argues that the furniture depicts her own story. She then begins to realize that she may be able to leave her country, however, she can never leave her own story. This problem leaves the border police cold. I ask myself, why wouldn't the carpenter let his friend leave the country without her own story in her suitcase? 12 minutes, give or take. That can't amount to much in an interrogation that lasts 75 hours.
But precisely those 12 minutes could be about Red Riding Hood. Precisely during those 12 minutes, the woman could say, "If all I'm allowed to take with me when I emigrate is my story, then I'm going to take at least one protagonist from it with me." 3:55 p.m. The bas relief that was carved across the four drawers of the dresser forms a kind of imaginary cut-out pattern, Mrs. Singer was quoted as saying in the protocol. If one would connect the lines reaching across the drawers and cut the resulting forms out of a fabric, the product would be a Catholic girl's school uniform from 1939. But if the lines are combined in another way, the product could be a maid's work uniform. From 1939 to 1941, I worked as a maid in Warsaw. Outside the house, I disguised myself as a Catholic schoolgirl. Out of the dresser's side rectangle, one could cut out a bag like the one that I sewed into my coat lining in 1959 when I tried to leave the country. The bag was meant to hide a piece of family jewelry that a neighbor had kept safe through the war. The rectangle could also be taken as the hem of a uniform I was given, into which two cartridges had been stuck when I worked in a German munitions factory in 1943. 3:15 p.m. After her travel visa was granted, the obstacle now seems to be the objects she wants to take with her. Customs officials accuse Alina Singer of wanting to smuggle goods belonging to national culture out of the country. Since 2:47 p.m., the woman seeking to leave the country has been answering questions about a mahogany dresser. 2:46 p.m. As we've learned so far from the interrogation of the children's dance teacher Alina Singer, this is her second attempt to emigrate. Her first was in 1959, 2 years after the ban on migration was lifted for citizens of Jewish descent. At that time, her attempt failed when customs officials conducted a body search and found a bag with silver jewelry in the lining of the woman's coat. 2:44 p.m. We enhanced the ticker. Now, pauses can be set up for the times when nothing is happening. But at the moment, the ticker jumps backwards during the pauses. It's possible that could result in a false count of Alina Singer's interrogation time. We are working on it. By October 30th, 2038, at 11:45 p.m, reports should once again correspond to the time of their transmission. And from that point on, time should move forward again. Are there problems? For the last approximately 15 minutes, Poland has been sending older and older news over the ticker. 2:39 p.m. The interrogation of Alina Singer, which began 75 hours ago at the Polish border, continues. The story cannot be terminated because your beginning is currently unavailable. To rescue it from endlessness, it will be rebroadcast over and over on automatically selected historical occasions. The broadcast will be discontinued when the story continues on its own.
Madonna, come here. Now tell me a story. But I've told you all my stories. Never mind, tell me anything. I want to hear you talk. Oh, all right. You'll stop me when you've had enough. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago. How long? Oh, 7, 8 years ago, I had a cactus. Are you sure that you don't mean you were a cactus? Quite sure. I had him given to me. Him? You mean it was a male cactus? I have no idea. I should say he was bisexual. But Miriam called him Jonathan. So, of course, we always said he when we spoke of him.
This is your automatic moderator. Your echo chamber has been amplified through a sexually ambiguous player. This ambiguity is language-specific. It has manifested itself in a conversation about a cactus having a male name, whereby in English a cactus is grammatically neutral. The default setup of listener's voice is multilingual in the event that English should no longer be available at the airtime of your conversation. In some languages, a cactus is indeed neutral, yet in others, it is masculine. Referring to a masculine player as masculine will not raise any ambiguity regarding the player's sexuality. If you want to maintain the ambiguity of Jonathan's sexuality, independently of a specific language context, use the interdimensional translation function. This function enables you to open up more than one language context in the architecture of your discourse.
I see. Miriam gave you Jonathan. And who is Miriam? A woman I knew in those days who went off to South America. Are you telling me a white slave traffic story by any chance?
No such luck. She went to Sao Paulo, not to Buenos Aires. Her husband, who taught mathematics, had been asked to go there for 3 years, and they offered the kind of salary that no poor European dares refuse.
Perhaps it is a kind of white slave traffic, after all. Have you noticed how South Americans seem to be worse than the others when it comes to thinking they can buy anything?
How did Miriam and her mathematician like it?
They liked it so well that they stayed. And so I kept Jonathan. Because I forgot to tell you, I had only taken him as a boarder.
I see. Now tell me about him.
He lived in a flower pot on a windowsill, the south window of the drawing room, if you remember my little house.
Of course I remember it, but I'm quite sure I never saw him there.
No. By the time you came, he had changed his habits.
So, tell me, did you ever find out why Miriam called him Jonathan?
I asked her, but she either could not or would not tell. She said that when she first saw him in the shop, the name came to her with such certainty that she only just stopped herself asking, "How much does Jonathan cost?"
So, there's a question I've always wanted to ask, but I feared that you might find it impertinent.
Did you? It seems you will never cease to surprise me.
My love, when I say that I fear to be impertinent, that's no reason why you should immediately proceed to be. What I want to know is this. Are all your friends lunatics? Or are you improving on nature for my benefit?
Well, I shouldn't like to swear that I never do that, but not in this case. And what's more, I don't see what you find so strange about it.
Don't you? Oh, well, if you say so.
Tell me, what did Jonathan look like? In shape, he was an architecture of rackets, rackets without handles. They grew close to one another and sometimes out of one another. And once in a way, as if he had dreamt of ancient Greece, he would start a thin column with vertical grooves, but only in a tentative manner, and he would give up and go back to his rackets.
This is your automatic moderator. Your echo chamber has been amplified through a spatially ambiguous player. Jonathan, who until now has been considered a masculine or a neutral subject, has manifested itself as architecture. The possibility that Jonathan is a male subject, a plant, and an architecture has activated the linguistic sprawl function. This function enables you to direct players who do not distinguish themselves from their surroundings. Such players neither dissimulate from their surroundings, nor do they assimilate into them. They mirror features from their surroundings, but not in the order those features appear in space. They depict their surroundings and, at the same time, undo them. Since they assume shapes that do not necessarily reveal much about their behavior, such players count as unpredictable. For further possibilities concerning players under linguistic sprawl conditions, apply reversed assimilation. Caution! Do not confuse linguistic sprawl with urban sprawl. Both describe an unruly growth principle. However, urban sprawl lacks public spaces, while linguistic sprawl is all about the production of temporary public spaces on the border between language areas. As an architecture of rackets, Jonathan has further activated the place translator function. The local results found for racket include tennis racket, baton, either used for conducting music or for beating demonstrators, trickery, rowdy, social activity, and uproar. Some of the results indicate spaces of potential violence. Depending on the result that corresponds to Jonathan, the architecture of your discourse might sprawl into an environment of potential violence, ambiguous sexuality, and rowdy beauty. Is that what Jonathan dreamt about when he dreamt about ancient Greece?
Das war FM Szenario von Eran Scherf. Sprecher Samuel Streif. Eine Produktion des Bayerischen Rundfunks 2012. Redaktion Herbert Kapfer. Veranstalter des Projekts FM Szenario sind der Bayerische Rundfunk Hörspiel und Medienkunst, A-Production e.V. Berlin, Hardware Medienkunstverein Dortmund, Haus der Kulturen der Welt Berlin, Les Complices Zürich, Museum für konkrete Kunst Ingolstadt, ZKM Karlsruhe und die Kulturstiftung des Bundes. Die Nutzerin, die die heutige Montage kreiert hat, ist Valerie Smith, Kuratorin im Berliner Haus der Kulturen der Welt.